Remember, remember the 5th of November of Mourinho, Van Gaal and Klopp. I know of no reason why Hazard this season should ever face the drop. Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I am your host on this bonfire night. Joining me this week, I've got Nick Davey.
I love that intro. That was brilliant.
Okay, there we go. That's Nick. We've got Chris Lappin.
Evening.
And we've got Richard Hero Hudson. How you doing, guys?
Evening, pilgrims.
I'm glad I got approval for that one.
Well, who should we love on the bonfire? Who could you name one person you'd love to love on a bonfire?
I think I'd stick with Sepp Blatter for now.
Nah, mine would still always be David Bellotti and Bill Arch.
I don't have a clue who they are.
Build a bonfire, put Bellotti on the top, put Bill Archer in the middle, then we'll burn the effing lot.
Thank you for saying effing right. We'll move on to the Champions League rather than bonfire night. This week in the Champions League fixtures, the English clubs did surprisingly well, with the exception of Arsenal. Chelsea beat Dynamo Kiev 2-1, Man United beat CSKA in Moscow 1-0, and Man City won, I want to say 3-1. 3-2?
Yeah.
3-2.
3-1.
3-1. They won 3-1 away at Sevilla. It was a very good result for them, and Man City are now through in the Champions League. So what I want to ask is...
I think that result, the 3-1, was a cracking result, because Sevilla, European wise, have been there and done it all, haven't they, in the last couple of years?
Mm. Yeah, it was actually when we did the Champions League draws at the start of the start of the season, essentially, we said Man City had one of the hardest groups, and they're through very early on. It's what, 4 games? That's about as early as you can go through in that group. So, credit to Man City. But what do we think about the other results? Man United beating CSKA Moscow 1-0. A very drab match. United looked better for the first 20 minutes.
They say the bloody least.
It's papering over cracks.
Okay, go on.
For me. It's one of them games that Van Gaal's going to come away with and sort of say, yeah, told you so. Everything I did was right there. And... like the taking off of Martial for bringing on Fellaini, persevering.
That's the worst substitution in the world. No wonder.
That got a lot of boos, that substitution.
Yeah, it did. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
See Fellaini warming up. It's just like...
I don't think the fans minded too much Fellaini come on. I think most fans are sort of used to that being the plan B now. But the fact that it Martial coming off and Rooney not.
But was it not justified when Rooney goes on and scores?
Well, that's it, though. Like, he can turn around now.
Rooney!
Like, yes, it worked. And now we'll get Rooney for another sort of 10 games playing garbage again.
Would you agree with this statement that you can use with Rooney, that form is temporary, class is permanent?
No, because the thing about form is players can go out of form and it is still a possibility that they'd never come back into form. If a player goes out of form for too long, they sometimes, especially as they get older, find it difficult to ever retain the kind of form they had before. And that is what we would say would be the class thing, actually getting back.
Yeah, you look... an example of that would be Torres.
Yeah, Torres went out of form, never recovered. Never became the player he was. Do we see Rooney realistically coming... Do we think Rooney will ever get back to where he was even 5 years ago?
Yeah, no. But he still has those classy games, doesn't he? Where he's like on a Tuesday night.
Right, but he's a club captain. He's on however many hundred thousands of pounds a week. You're expecting more from someone who is just can't be dropped for that amount. You're expecting more, aren't you? Rather than the odd classy game. He's a Man United player who should be at the standard every single game.
Nick, you just said he had a class night on Tuesday. He had one moment where he had a class act. But 5 minutes before that, he basically fell over his own feet.
Oh, my, that was the worst miss I've ever seen. That is not an understatement. I texted everyone I knew at that point and just said, that is the worst Rooney miss I have ever seen. The ball a yard away from the goal. Not even that. One player on the floor in front of him just can't kick it in. That was, I think, that epitomised Rooney's season at the moment, not the goal. Okay, but there was another class moment in that game from one of Man United's classier players, Chris Smalling. Mike Smalling.
Base quality.
Saved a certain goal from, I think it was Seydou Doumbia after De Gea's good save. Would we say Chris Smalling is one of the best defenders in the world?
Well, on present form, yes.
Well, yeah, at the moment, is he one of the best defenders in the world?
I'd say certainly in England. He's England's best centre-back we've got at the moment, especially what with Cahill decided to sort of give up and Terry obviously ageing. But yeah, I'd say Smalling's definitely England's best centre-back at the moment and probably the one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League, if not the best. Weld is a bit of a strong statement.
Well, when I'm saying one of the best, I'm talking top five. And I'd say he makes it into that top five.
Top 10,
on current form.
Maybe. You've got a debate on your hands, top five.
No, I'd go with top five because you look around the sort of the world for centre-backs and it is a dying art, this, a quality centre-back nowadays. There's not many out there. You look at, say, Chiellini, Thiago Silva.
Thiago Silva has his off days as well.
Sergio Ramos.
Yeah, Jerome Boateng. He's been very good this season. Maybe Mats Hummels. He's been quite good for Dortmund.
Yeah, there's not many out there.
I'd say he's definitely been up there at the moment. So, okay, Man United, maybe it's papering over the cracks a bit. Chelsea, though. It was a brilliant Beckham-like Willian free kick that pulled them out of the fire after it ended up going back down to 1-0 after an Alexander Dragovic own goal, who then went and equalised. But Willian scored one of the best free kicks I've seen in a long time to win them the game. Do we think
It's free kick already this season.
Yeah, he's been a free kick masterclass this season. Do we think that win can really boost them? Especially the way it happened, the last minute goal, the free kick. Do we think that win can boost them on this season?
I think, yeah, a win like that really can turn a season. You hear it and see it all the time. There's obviously a real buzz about the place. And you could say, yeah, in the manner of the win, they got it. I think it can kickstart their season. Or at least, yeah. I think, well, if you want to say kickstart the season, you can't really call that, I think, in November. But you can sort of, what the word am I looking for? Re-galvanise the season?
Re-energise. Let's go with that.
Okay, re-energise the season. Get them a few wins. Get the pressure off Mourinho.
I think they need to show it in the league.
I think it's a different
kettle of fish.
Away to Stoke is probably not the one. It's not the
well, they, especially after one. Losing already there at the Britannia. I think obviously Chelsea aren't going to win the Premier League. It's impossible, pretty much. And I don't think they're even going to get the Champions League. But
well, no club has ever been in their position and finished top seven.
Yeah, but we said this before. If it's going to be any club can do it, it's that Chelsea side.
Yeah.
And there was a resounding show of support for Mourinho in that game. The entire stadium stood up, all singing for Mourinho.
So I think it's all the banners.
It's pretty clear where the Chelsea fans are on this. They really don't want Mourinho gone.
Are the players though?
Well, that's the issue because I think the board has sort of shown a bit of support because I think if they were going to sack him, it would have happened by now. Or it would have happened maybe after the defeat to Liverpool. So I think the board has shown a bit of support. The players
Terry showed support.
I think he still needs to come out and actually say, we're not going to sack him. He's going to be here till at least the end of the season.
You can't sort of do that, though, can you? Because it's like if the results continue, at some point you do have to cut your losses. If this would be any other manager for in the Chelsea helm, they'd be gone. It's only because it is Mourinho that he's been given such a stay of execution.
But that's the same for a lot of managers. You could say the same with Alex Ferguson. He had some poor seasons and he got, the stay of execution. Moyes comes in, one bad season, admittedly a very, very bad season. He doesn't have quite the same saving grace. Some managers are just favoured at clubs.
Yeah, because, look at some of the other ones that have been there over the years. Like Di Matteo, he went and won the Champions League and he was gone.
He was never really wanted, though, was he? He was only wanted till the end of the season, but as they won the Champions League, they sort of felt like they had to offer him the job.
Ancelotti won the double, and then...
Yeah, I never really got... Well, he ever... I was just thinking this the other day, because what did he actually do wrong, apart from win everything?
Well, the one thing I will say about Ancelotti as well is he's never stayed at any club for very long. Someone who brings short-term success to the big clubs. He's a bit like the Tony Pulis of the big clubs. Yeah. In just the weird way that works around.
We'll win a league and then quit.
Well, weren't Chelsea about fifth or sixth when he was sacked?
Was it the one where Tottenham beat them? And then that was Di Matteo, I think, when they ended fifth because he got no. Wait.
No, this was quite early on in the season, wasn't it?
He got sacked at the end of the season because then AVB took over.
I think Nick has it right on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on from Chelsea. Obviously, we talked about Man City for a bit. how well do we think they've done so far in the Champions League, qualifying already, and how well do we think they could maybe do from this point on?
I don't think they're going to win it, but I think they can get to...
They need to try and go on and win the group so they don't get Barcelona or...
Yeah, well, they're going to win the group, aren't they?
I don't know. Juventus are pretty good.
Juventus are very much in a transgression season.
They lost the
Italian Jack Colback, didn't they? So
yeah, they're doing quite poorly in Serie A as well at the moment. They're not flying at the moment. They've lost quite a lot of players. Okay, we'll talk about the elephant in the room. You know, there's three successful clubs so far in Europe. Arsenal.
The letdowns.
Absolutely spanked. Oh,
Bayern Munich was a...
Bayern Munich in that form last night would have spanked any club.
Oh, yeah. Let's not be harsh.
Look at Arsenal, but how good were Bayern?
Yeah.
Bayern
were no club is doing well when they go to the Allianz. I think they were always going to lose. What was it, 5-1 in the end?
Yeah.
I don't think you can point fingers at Arsenal. They were just class.
If Real Madrid had gone there last night and Bayern had played like that, Real Madrid would have come away.
Yeah, anyone.
In a tonking.
So we don't think Arsenal defended poorly in that game?
They didn't defend great, but then your likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona don't defend particularly well.
Right, but the thing that gripes me about this
Arsenal
loss...
Yeah, but have Arsenal really got a great defence that you'd expect to like?
Well, no, they did have injuries as well. Koscielny wasn't playing, Bellerin wasn't
best
playing. So, but the thing that really gripes me about this Arsenal game is when they were at home, they played the perfect away performance, essentially, ironically, at home, in which they just sat back, let Bayern Munich come on to them, hit them on the break, did it perfectly, 2-0 win. They go away from home... And they decide to play a much more attacking game. Surely they'd have learned their lesson in the first game. We can do this if we just sit back and frustrate them. Why didn't they try and do the same thing?
I haven't got a clue why they played so open.
Does anyone? Nope. None of us have got a clue.
What was that?
The game at home was just an anomaly for Wenger. Because Wenger doesn't play the way that he played at home. That isn't his style.
No, he's done it once or twice, though. Man City, I think that was... That was away from home, wasn't it?
But that was a typical sort of Arsenal performance last night. That there's this one plan and we're sticking by it. It's like the opposite of Van Gaal's United.
Tell you what, though. Credit to Bayern Munich. For two goals in that game, the Alaba one, that was an absolute worldie. But my favourite one was that last Müller goal. The ball that got played through and how easy he made a ridiculous finish look.
I just love Müller as a player.
That was when you realised, yeah, this is a truly world-class player.
He's not my favourite team. I thought Iron Robin, how good was that man? On the pitch for like, 2 minutes and then...
Yeah, first touch.
38 seconds and he scored a goal.
Yeah, first touch for him.
See, I'm the opposite with Robin. I'd just like to punch him in the face.
He just gets better with age.
I would like to punch Robin in the face. He knocked out Mexico, and I love the Mexicans in the World Cups. Okay, do we think Arsenal can qualify from this group? And to do that, they would have to win both of their last remaining games, have Olympiacos lose away to Bayern Munich, and then lose at home to Arsenal, and Arsenal would have to beat them at least 2-0 away from home.
It's not in the realms of... It's still possible. Because of who Olympiacos still have to play.
Yeah, but this is, again, the Arsenal side that lost at home to Olympiacos.
Yeah. I think they will go out, but it wouldn't be a huge surprise if they still somehow manage to scrape through.
For me, I look at a team like Olympiacos and I think they're about sort of Stoke level. They have that sort of level of players. And if it was Arsenal going away to Stoke in a league, I'd say winning by... You know, two goals or more. It's not ridiculous, but you wouldn't bet on it, would you?
They could beat Zagreb, and then probably get to the belief that all you need to do is win 2-0.
You could just quite easily see Bayern and Olympiacos having a very boring draw.
I think Bayern Munich at home, they try and play up for their fans. I agree with what you said, Richard. I don't think it's ridiculous to see them go through. It wouldn't be like the biggest shock of the season. But I think going away to Olympiacos is a lot harder than people will often give it credit for. That isn't an easy game for any means. Okay, but let's move on from the English clubs. I want to talk about Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. How do we break the dominance these three clubs have in Europe Every single season, it seems to be at least one of those three teams is in the final and probably winning it. So how do we? Is there a way to break that dominance from the English clubs' perspectives? Or do we think, a bit like how the English Premier League sort of lost their dominance, do you think it will happen naturally? That they'll just
I think it's a natural thing. I think that the Spanish clubs are worried about the... And Bayern are worried about the amount of money that's coming into the English game at the moment.
I reckon... sorry, mate.
And, you know, you just go back 5 years and it was two English clubs. Well, was it a bit longer now than when it was United Chelsea in the final? But, you know, it's
2008.
It's not a million miles away, and I think it'll turn around again. I think Italian clubs hadn't done anything for many years, and then Juventus got to the final last year. It comes and goes.
I think it's just his period. And also, I think if Chris Hughton was up against one of them, he'd get out of tactic.
Tell you what.
I think it's just a spell. Like, I reckon Arsenal in a few years' time, once they dump Wenger, once they remove that idiot from the club, then I think they'll start to. I reckon if they get like someone like Guardiola, then they'll start to dominate.
Are you Piers Morgan in disguise? Wow, that was harsh. Oh, he's a very good manager. I'll be sad when Wenger retires. But tell you what,
I think you've got to look at PSG as one that's going to be challenging them as well in the next couple of years.
A bit of dosh.
I don't. I think PSG is very much a false dawn.
No one really wants to play in France, though.
That's the problem. You can attract a certain caliber of player, but then you get, like, truly the best. Maria.
Yeah, but who really wants to play in Munich? People go on about United, who wants to come and play in Manchester, but Munich's not particularly great.
No, Munich's not particularly great, but at least you can say the German league is probably rivaling to be one of the best leagues in the world. You'd say the French league is at best rivaling to be, what, fourth?
You get a lot of good Steins out there as well.
There's a lot of attraction to the German league, because it's but for the French league, the only attraction to going to PSG is that it's PSG and you're going to get all that money. Apart from that, I don't think PSG will ever quite
millions
get
of
that.
Dollars. Millions of dollars.
At most, PSG will end up being a semi-final kind of calibre of club.
You don't agree with the rumour that Ronaldo whispered in Blanc's ear that he's coming to PSG next year?
Oh, I'd love to not see that.
Yeah, I'd love to see the reporter who sneakily got his ear in there too. Oh, come on, that is just such a crock of shit. Moving on from crocks of shit, let's move on to our game.
Hooray!
What is the game called, Crocks of Shit?
Yeah, the game is not called Crocks of Shit, but you'll probably think it is. Right, we did
it's
this...
called Remember the 5th of November.
No, we did this a few weeks ago, where we have a number of players from a number of nations. We have to say who got the most caps out of them.
Oh, that was my game!
Yeah, our first round, we're going to be doing Brazil. You're going to have four questions each.
Is it the case of just shouting out?
No, you're each going to have four questions. There's 12 questions, so you each get... We're going to start with Nick. Nick, your three players are Ronaldinho. We're back on air. Your three players are Ronaldinho, Lucio, and Ronaldo. Who got the most caps?
Is it the big Ronaldo? Sorry, Shane. Sorry to interrupt, mate. Does it happen to be the big Ronaldo that scored the two goals against Germany?
The other one didn't play for them.
Yeah, this is Brazil.
So we're talking about the guy who scored two against Germany.
There's only one Brazilian Ronaldo.
Can you say yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know who
Lucio is. So much fun on the train up to Manchester.
This is why I'm drinking on that train.
Ronaldinho scored that amazing free kick, but he hasn't been around for that. I'm going to go for in third place Lucio, second spot Ronaldo, and up and number one Ronaldinho.
Right, you get 1 point for that. Lucio is first with 105 caps, Ronaldo is second with 98 caps, and Ronaldinho third with 97 caps.
But I didn't get a single one right.
You got one right, you got Ronaldo in second place.
Oh. Okay. Hooray!
Yeah, right. Chris, you're going next.
Okay.
Your three players are Roberto Carlos, Rivaldo, and Juan.
Oh, Roberto Carlos, he was my favourite player of all time.
Roberto Carlos is your favourite player of all time.
Oh, sorry, in the small print, favourite left back of all time.
Are we going highest or lowest?
Do it whichever way round you want to do it.
I'll go.
How good was that?
Ronaldo, Carlos, and then last but least the other one.
Can you do that again? Nick was talking.
So most Rivaldo.
Most Rivaldo.
Second Carlos and third who's the last third? Jan.
Okay, you got no points there. That Roberto Carlos got 125. Oh. Juan got 79 and Rivaldo got 74.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, right.
How good was Brazil's team in 02, by the way?
Yes, it was, right. Richard.
Yes.
Your three players are Gilberto Silva, Rivellino, and Robinho.
Robinho's got far too many. I know that.
What a waste of money.
Robinho's like about 100 caps or something ridiculous. So he's got to be top. Was it Gilberto Silva, one of the others?
Yeah.
And who was the other one? Rivellino.
Rivellino.
Right. Being that I don't know too much of Rivellino, I'm putting him bottom. I'm presuming he's a few years ago, so they didn't get as many games then. And I'll go Silva second.
For some reason I have a phone alarm going off. Yeah, you got all three right there. Robinho has 100 caps. He is one of the most capped Brazil players of all time. Gilberto Silva has 93 caps, and Rivellino has 92 caps. How do you not know too much about Rivellino? He is a proper legend of the game. Oh, Christ.
I know of him, but...
You know his name.
I've not really seen much of him.
All right, okay. Nick, you're back.
Hello.
Your three players are Gilmar, the goalkeeper, Pele, and Jaume Santos.
Pele.
Yeah, Pele. So, Gilmar, Pele, and Jaume Santos.
Okay, now I'm going to go for Pele as number one, the goalie number two, and the other bloke number three.
Okay, you get 1 point again.
For goodness sake.
Jaume Santos has 98. I'm fairly certain he was a left back. Gilmar has 94, and Pele only has 92.
What?
He has less caps than Robinho. There is no justice in this world.
Well, I think it's because there's more games these days, though, isn't there? So.
I'm not sure there is. Right.
I think there is less games nowadays. I mean...
back in those days.
Okay.
In the olden times.
In the olden... Oh, my God. Chris.
Yeah.
Your three players are Romario, Zico, and Emerson.
Emerson used to play for Middlesbrough.
I think so, yeah. Defensive midfielder.
I'll go him last. Romario, Zico.
Okay, you got no points. Emerson has 73 caps.
Really?
Zico has 71 and Romario has 70. Chris, you have 0 points so far. It's not going well for you. Right, okay. Richard.
Yeah.
All of these players are still playing today, so it shouldn't be too bad for you. Dani Alves, Kaká, and Maicon. That's Maicon, the right back.
Yeah.
So Dani Alves, Kaká, and Maicon.
Both all pretty old, though, aren't they now?
I think they're all in their late 30s-ish. 35, 36, around that area.
I'll go Kaká, Maicon, Alves.
Ooh, only 2 points this time. Kaká was first with 91 caps. Dani Alves was second with 85 caps, and Maicon's only got 76. So he was quite a bit behind there.
I only get 1 point then, don't I?
No, you got Kaká and...
No, I said Kaká, Maicon, Alves.
You only get 1 point. Thank you for being honest, Richard. Well done there. Right, you got 4 points in total now. Right, Nick, back to you. Your three players are Adriano, who was also a legend back on PES 2008. I'll just mention that now. Adriano, Julio Baptista, and Ilano. Ilano, you may remember him from Man City.
Yeah, he had a good free kick once against Newcastle.
Yes, he did.
And I once saw him at Wifteen, actually, against Man City when we beat them in the Carling Cup. But I'm going to go for number one, Adriano. Number two, Ilano. And three, Yodio Baptista, who's played for Arsenal, if I remember correctly.
You only got 1 point there. Ilano has the most caps at 50. Adriano got 48. He had a lot of injuries later on in his career. Massive weight problems. And Julio Baptista has 47 caps. So you got Baptista right, but
Yeah. So I'll keep getting 1 point, don't I?
No, you're going along steadily.
I'm like that team that always draws.
Right, Chris, you're still in with a shot of doing well here. Yep. So your players are Luis Al of Benfica, Luis Fabiano, and Roque Jr.
Yeah.
I expect you to know who all three of these players are. I'm like ashamed if you don't.
Who's the first one again?
Luis Al, the Benfica centre back, still playing. Luis Fabiano and Roque Jr.
I go. Roque Jr. first. Luis Al and then Luis Fabiano.
Oh, you are so close to getting all three. Roque Jr. is first with 48, but it's Luis Fabiano second with 45 and Luis Al with 44. Oh. That was close. But you're on the board. You got a point. Well done. Right, Richard.
Yeah.
You're going to get a hint on this one. It's not much of a hint, but all three of these players debuted in 2003.
Right.
So, your players are Claverson of Man United, Diego and Gilberto.
Who?
So this is Richard and Claverson, Diego and Gilberto.
I think Claverson was a bit of a flash in, well, he was a flash in the pan that he was good at one World Cup and then pretty much didn't do much after. I'm putting Claverson bottom.
Okay.
Gilberto top. And who was the other one?
Diego.
Diego middle.
And that is a massive 3 points. That is correct. Gilberto had 35 caps, Diego 33, and Claverson 32. So there's only two in it between the top and bottom there. That's some good knowledge there. Right.
No, that was a guess. I went with Claverson for just being bottom and just guessed between the other two.
All right. Okay. This is the last round for this part. So, Nick, is there a chance to redeem yourself?
Yep.
Your three players are Juninho Pernambucano, Chris, and Ed Milson.
Okay. Is that the Juninho that played for Middlesbrough?
It's Juninho Pernambucano. I don't know if he played for Middlesbrough or not.
So Juninho, Bacalada, Milson, and who was the other one?
Yeah, Juninho, Ed Milson, and Chris.
Okay, number one, I'm gonna go for Ed Milson as number one. Number two, Chris, and number three, Juninho. But no.
Oh, Nick, you are nothing if not consistent. That is 1 point again.
Oh,
Ed Milson got 42 caps. Juninho got 40 caps, and Chris got 27. Chris was quite a lot lower there.
Oh, Chris, you disappoint us. Oh.
Right, Chris, these are very modern players.
Yep.
So, are you ready? Oscar of Chelsea, Fred of wherever the fuck he's at now, and Lucas Moura of PSG.
Fred.
Yeah, Fred, the least Fred. Brazilian named man ever.
Frederick.
I'll go Fred, Oscar, Moura.
Oh, he's right back in it. That's all 3 points there. Fred got 37 caps, Oscar got 35, and Moura got 32.
Hey. I just get the hard questions. I'm going to have a protest.
I did this randomly.
I was saying before the podcast that I don't really bet that much. One of the bets I did do prior to the World Cup was that Fred was going to be the top scorer. That's why I don't bet so much.
Right,
prior to the World Cup, he was absolutely on fire for Brazil. He turned up at the World Cup and he made like Emil Heskey look natural.
He was not very good at all. Was he?
He was shocking.
I think it was that dive in the first game that just set it all off. Right, Richard, your final one, and there's not a lot in this one, so I think there's only a couple of caps, if I remember correctly. David Luiz, Ramirez, and Thiago Silva. And I'm fairly certain they all debuted within a year of each other.
Right, I'm going to go, based on age, Silva top. Was it Ramirez, did you say?
Yeah, David Luiz and Ramirez.
Silva has to be top. Because he's, what, is he 33?
I think he's a bit younger than that.
No, I think he's really quite old now. I think... I'll go Silva, Ramirez, Luiz.
Oh, that's only 1 point. Thiago Silva had... Oh, here we go. Thiago Silva had 58 caps. David Luiz had 54 caps. And Ramirez has 51 caps. So you only got 1 point there. Which means before we do round two later on, Nick, you're on 4 points. Chris, you're on 4 points. And Richard, you're way out in the lead with 8 points.
Back of the net. Yeah.
He's only just turned 31, Thiago Silva.
Yeah, has he?
I didn't think he was that old, right.
He looks older then.
He looks like a lesbian or a transvestite. I can't remember which one it is. Anyway.
That's just rude.
It is rude, but it's true. Chiellino, Massimo Chiellino. He's another farcical figure there. The Leeds catastrophe, as I'm going to call it, is still going on. He said he was going to sell the club to the Leeds United fans group.
Mm.
He's now said he's not going to sell the club to the Leeds United fans group. He's also said he's not going to attend games because the fans don't like him. He sacked another manager fairly recently. He's put in charge that knob, Steve Evans.
Heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah. The thing I'll ask the group here, what do we think is in Leeds' future? Do we think they can ever become a big club again, become even just a Premier League club again?
I hope not. I think the fan base is always going to be there. I mean, look, I mean, they're probably one of the most supported clubs in the country still. They're up there. I mean, they certainly are. But I mean, if you look at the championship
everybody's second favourite team for a couple of years.
Well, no, if you look at the championship figures of when there's games on, like Leeds are just miles ahead of even Sheffield Wednesday and Forest on watched games. Like, they're just massive there to their fan base on that. And whenever they go anywhere, like, or even like Reading on Tuesday night, they'll still take like 4,000 supporters. So they've got the fan base there to become, certainly still to become a big club again. But it's just the... they need the backing.
Oh, how's their debt situation these days? Is it, what, are they still massively in debt, or they?
I don't actually know. To be honest, I think they're not proper like in the dumps really financially. Oh. I think they're okay. They get like an investor or anyone, they could easily fly. I just think at the moment, I mean, if you're a Leeds fan, you just really give up on it.
Leeds could easily become a Man City.
Well, they could, but look at where the club's at now. They've got some overweight bloke in charge. They've got Chiellino, who just needs to lead the club. I mean, I think it's just a joke, really.
He is just a poisonous owner, isn't he?
How did he pass the proper person's test? That's what I still don't understand, Tommy.
It makes you think, no, those tests must just be, do you have enough money to buy the club? Yes, here's a club. Because, I mean, he was on trial for tax evasion in Italy. I think he still is.
I don't even think one of the questions is, do you have enough money to buy the club? Blazers got through that one.
Oh, no, I have to admit, I do feel very sorry for the Leeds fans. I know they had a lot of good years, but I don't think any fan should have to go through this kind of stuff. Obviously, my club, Southampton, went through a similar thing with Rupert Lowe. Never quite got that bad, but that sent us down to League One. Luckily, we managed to get some good owners come in and, you know, take us over. We could have ended up with Sisu and Coventry. I think that was one that quite nearly happened. Thank God it didn't. So I have a lot of sympathy for the Leeds fans at the moment, because when you're owned by an absolute megalomaniac like Massimo Chiellino, you just have no idea what direction your club's going to go in, but you know it's probably not going to be up. So
as a Man United fan, then I have to sort of laugh at one point at it. but there's something missing from there's been something missing from the season for so many years without the Man United Leeds game. Yeah. However much you like to see your rivals suffering, you still want to have those games against your rivals.
It's exactly like Southampton v Portsmouth. We wanted to see Portsmouth suffer just like we suffered, but down to League Two. No, but no Southampton fan wanted that. We wanted them suffering in the Premier League, finishing what, 16th or 17th every single year, never doing well in the cups. But we get to batter them twice a year. They survive and they're okay. That's about it. But when you just don't have those rivalry matches, it takes away from it all. It takes away from the experience. And I do think it's sad when things like this happen to clubs like Portsmouth, like Leeds, and Coventry. They had it happen to them in a big way as well.
Yeah.
So, I think it's very sad, and I do hope someone has the balls to kick
Chiellino out. If you want one positive about Leeds, one thing, they are bringing through a lot of good youngsters.
Oh, yeah. Lewis Cook, Moat, Byram.
Charlie Taylor.
Yep. They've got a lot of good players there. So hopefully it can all come good.
I think they just need. I mean, they need a goal scorer. They spent $2 million on Chris Wood, but he hasn't really delivered the goods. I mean, when we played them at Ellen Road, he was sort of one of our best players because he kept them missing from like stupid ranges.
All right, yeah, we'll move on though. The new England squad for the friendlies against Spain and France have been released. Nothing too major has happened in this one, but Eric Dier is in the squad for the first time. Dele Alli is back in the squad, and Fabian Delph, who has not played a lot of games, is still in the squad. Apart from that, is as you would expect everywhere else.
Well, we looked beforehand on Fabian Delph, and he played 15 minutes in a game right at the beginning of the season v Watford, and he came back on and played 5 minutes versus Seville the other night. So he's played 20 minutes in total this season.
And yeah, what was that England game when he only lasted like a minute and then the snake got taken off?
The one thing I
didn't even know snakes had hamstrings.
I can't understand, and this is one thing I do genuinely wonder. If he was still playing at Villa, would he have gotten the squad based on those stats?
No, not at all.
No, it's ridiculous.
It does just make me wonder, does Roy Hodgson, literally like Football Manager, have just a list of players and goes, yeah, they're about right. They've got a decent level of overall, haven't they? Is it something just like that?
Is that fuck it, The Apprentice on an hour and I still haven't selected the England team?
I mean, you do have to wonder how close games like Football Manager get to selecting the England team, because you look at those teams when they get selected, some players have no justification.
He's basically gone, yeah, he's got overall stats of 82.
It's got to be something like
that. What I will say is...
Yeah, but in Hodgson's head, he needs to try and stay loyal to some of the players who play well under him.
Don't go with loyalty in Fabian Delph.
I'm saying from Hodgson's point of view.
What I will say is Eric Dier is deserved. I think he's been brilliant in the holding
of
Tottenham.
Yeah, he has been very, very solid. He's been playing in defence and midfield. And tell you what, I don't think England have that many players who can do that role. Defensive midfielder, probably.
Jonjo Shelvey is probably better in that role.
Not defensive midfield. I'd say Jonjo Shelvey is better in sort of regular central midfield.
We're kind of blessed with more attacking midfielders. We don't have that many.
What Roy should do is that, like, 20 minutes before Fabian Delph arrives, is then just say, actually, I've changed my mind, you're not in.
So the one thing that I do find surprising here, and I've just had a look over this as well, we've got like two right-backs, two left-backs, three goalkeepers, and we've got three centre-backs. Gary Cahill, Phil Jones. Oh, no, wait, I've misread that. Yeah, I've completely misread that, don't worry, don't mind me. I was having a little moment there. I was thinking to myself, why haven't we included Ryan Shawcross yet? Because... I mean, Phil Jagielka's out injured now. I think he's out for quite a while. I think he's out until about Christmas. Mm. Even with those players there, I still, especially Phil Jones, he's barely playing. Ryan Shawcross, what has he got to do to get another England cap? Are they just thinking, well, maybe we can still get him to play for Wales? Because I can't see why...
He broke people's legs.
He broke one person's leg many years ago and apologised instantly for it.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think he did good.
I wouldn't say he did good, but it, I mean, people. Even if you look back to that incident, you can tell it's like there's no maliciousness in it.
Basically he has a face that doesn't fit England.
I really hope that isn't the reason.
He is a B+ player.
Because tell you what, how did Jamie Vardy get in the team, Ben?
Oh, he is amazing. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Vardy's in the team because Sturridge and Beck aren't fit.
I kind of hope that isn't true.
I think Sturridge has got to earn his place back in the team.
I agree.
I think Kane and Vardy at the moment should start ahead of Rooney as well.
I would definitely agree with that. Maybe, well, yeah. The question is, should Vardy start? I mean, we don't know if we're playing with two strikers or one striker.
Hodgson was saying today that he might start him on the wing, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that could be approached. I'd have maybe Rooney behind...
Maybe the right side of a three.
You could have Rooney behind Kane and have Sterling one side and Vardy the other.
No, we can't. Because, you know what, that proves everything I've said about Hodgson, if he's actually gone out and said that. He just sellotapes a squad together. He doesn't pick players going, this is the position, these are the formations, these are the tactics I'm going to do, and this player's best for this one, this player's best for this one. He picks a group of players and goes, oh, fuck, I've got to figure out where to put them now. Honestly, it was like the World Cup and we played Rooney out wide. Are you kidding me?
Do you think when he gets a jigsaw, he actually just like just rams pieces in?
He's got to, hasn't he?
That's what I do.
Is it? Oh no, I'm sorry. Like, I don't disagree.
Surprise that.
I don't disagree terribly with that England team. I think by and large it's mostly there for what, especially for what we're going to have at the Euros. But whenever we call up an England team, we just literally square pegs and round holes, and we just sellotape an entire team together and go, we're sure you'll do well when we actually play. We don't seem to train for anything in particular, or try for any particular philosophy or style.
He should be just happy to play, so he should, like, he should play wherever.
No, you play a player how he's best going to be used. We've got a player like Jamie Vardy who we know is lethal when used correctly. I mean, even if it is only for Leicester, but it's still in the Premier League. He's doing this against the Premier League clubs. We know a player like that can be a weapon. And we say, oh, we'll stick him out wide, where he is basically no threat to anyone on doing the one thing he's been doing all season of getting just in behind, playing off the shoulder of the centre-backs. You don't do that out wide. I'm sorry. What is that?
Leicester are doing really well.
Do you know what? Roy Hudson's going to go and play 4-4-2 with Vardy up front now that I've said all this.
Well, hopefully, yeah, with Kane.
We'll move on to more delightful English news. Chris Ramsey and Chris Powell both sacked. That's Huddersfield and QPR. Now,
With the QPR one, you can't really be surprised. It's probably deserved. Chris Powell, though, on the other hand, I think that's very harsh. Huddersfield aren't a big club in the Championship. And he was having them. They were 18th. Yep, fairly close to relegation zone. But I just don't really get it.
You wouldn't have bet on them going down this season, would you?
He's a good man. Yeah, exactly. He's a good manager.
Is it because he is black?
Well, okay, that's what all the. And this is something that actually genuinely annoys me now. That's what something will kick it out of the campaign is.
No,
what they'll come out and
no,
said,
it's
a terrible day for black footballers. I just think, are you people just paid to do this at this point? Because why couldn't they have just come out and turned around and said, this probably has nothing to do with race? Why couldn't they have just come out and said that? It's like they have to justify that they currently have this position.
If anyone thinks Ramsey sacking has anything to do with racism, they're just a complete idiot, aren't they?
It's and to do with the fact he's a very poor
even
man.
Rising to it. It's got nothing to do with racism, man. You just get idiots. It's out there who think this is a racism issue. It's not. You get the job when you're like John Barnes, that prat. What was it when he was saying? I don't get any jobs because I'm black, mate. It's because you failed miserably at Tranmere in League One. At Celtic, it was a laughing stock. You're not going to get a job unless it's probably Conference South and North and below. Maybe you might get a Conference Premier club going in. Chairman's gone insane and tries to employ you.
But, right. I'll tell you what, we'll move away from the racism discussion because even though we are all right, I will guarantee you that, I'm going to take a moral imperative here and say we're all right. We'll probably offend someone or other.
Well, look at Chris Hughton.
Hughton's doing brilliantly well at the moment. But no, we're going to talk about...
Can we find Hasselbeck? He's brilliantly.
All right, we're going to talk about English managers, particularly, because Tim Sherwood got sacked last week. He's been replaced by Remy Gard, which we're going to talk about later. We've got Chris Ramsey, another English manager, another young English manager. We've got Chris Powell, another young English manager, all being sacked.
Well, Chris Powell has been replaced by some guy called Wagner.
Yeah, he's been replaced by an American. Chris Ramsey, I mean, unless Tim Sherwood gets the job. David Wagner, former Dortmund coach.
Do you reckon there'll be a...
There'll probably be a...
Huddersfield, Liverpool loan.
I doubt it, but Chris Ramsey will also probably, unless he gets replaced by Tim Sherwood, he's probably going to get replaced by a foreign manager.
No,
are English managers getting squeezed out of the game?
I reckon they'll just give it to Warnock to end the season, but Warnock hardly sort of gets you buzzed. It's like it's a young English manager, but
do we think English managers are being squeezed out of the game because there's more and more foreign managers at the top levels, more and more now coming in at the lower levels?
Well, it's worrying, isn't it?
If you've got to prove yourself as a young English manager, where the hell do you do it?
Off the top of my head, I can't really think of many in the Premier League. Gary Monk,
it's just the same as the players, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there's five English managers in the Premier League.
What, Gary Monk, Eddie Howe...
Gary Monk, Eddie Howe, Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew. There's one more.
Yeah, there's one more. Steve McClaren.
Steve McClaren, and he's not going to be there.
Yeah, he's
long.
Not going back.
And he'll get replaced by a bloody Frenchman, won't he? Do we think it's a genuine concern, though? Because I have something which I call the Patrick Bamford effect, which is where Chelsea loaned Patrick Bamford out to Middlesbrough. He had an absolutely outstanding season at Middlesbrough. Gets back to Chelsea and just gets told you're going on loan again. The reason because of that is because there was no matter how well he performed at Middlesbrough, he could not impress significantly at that level to go in and press into the Chelsea team. There was nothing he could do at Middlesbrough. It was a pointless loan. May have been good for his development, but in terms of ever getting back into that team, he couldn't ever do it. I think we're seeing the same situation happen with managers, where they're going to clubs where they can't possibly impress enough to go and get the big jobs. Which English manager can impress enough where he's at to get the top four jobs?
In Germany and Spain, you've got 10 times as many top grade A level FIFA coaching, and it costs 10 times as much in this country to do it.
Well, I mean, I just look at it now and I think if you're a young English manager, maybe you get lucky like Tim Sherwood and you just happen to get into a job at the right time. But then you get stuck with clubs that just aren't right for you. I think Aston Villa wasn't right for him. I think Tottenham was never going to be right for him. They always wanted a different kind of manager. You have to luck out to get those top level kind of jobs. And there's no chance they're getting the very top jobs.
Tim Sherwood don't help the England cause. Because clubs look at him and end up thinking, he's just a jackass.
Yeah, a little bit, but there's absolutely no chance, really. Maybe Gary Monk, even he's getting questions asked, is the one manager I think maybe could end up getting a top four job one day. But the managers are just being squeezed down the divisions now. For Championship, it's harder than ever for English managers. And you think, if you're an English manager at the League 1, League 2 level, seriously, how good would you have to do to end up getting a Premier League job? Or to get that League 1, League 2 level club to a Premiership?
Well, like, once it did, it didn't it? Like, Brendan Rodgers came up through the ranks somewhat, and then, you know, he leaves Liverpool looking a fool.
Yeah. What's the other one? Nigel Adkins at Southampton. He's a great example. He took a team from League One to the Championship to the Premiership, did decently in the Premiership, got sacked. Where the hell is Nigel Adkins now? I mean, Eddie Howe, if he doesn't do well this season, what's going to happen to him?
I think it was like six promotions.
Nigel Adkins sucked.
United took the risk with Moyes.
Yeah, and that didn't work out well. I mean, that's a British manager, but...
The clubs are taking the risk every now and again, but when they do...
But they're not giving them the proper opportunities. I don't think Moyes ever got the investment he needed for that club. I think Tim Sherwood never got the freedom he needed at Aston Villa. I think you've got a lot of these English managers who are going to clubs which are not well-run, or at the time are not well-run. How many clubs in the Championship would you seriously say are well-run clubs that if an English manager goes to, a bit like a Burnley, where they're going to get the time, they're going to get the patience, they're going to get a bit of money to work with. How many clubs are there? Brighton, at the moment, yeah, okay, I'd say that's one. I would say that is one. How many other clubs? In the Premier League, in the Championship?
I don't really look at the Championship.
You've got, Brighton, you've got a chairman who loves the football club. He says, and you've got Paul Barber, who's probably one of the best CEOs in the league, because he used to do it for the FA and Tottenham. So.
That's just one club, and this is, 44 teams? For me, I'm just very worried that English managers are getting squeezed so far down the divisions that they're going to really struggle to impress at the Premier League and Championship level. And when you've got foreign managers who are out there proving it in foreign leagues, it's going to be so much easier to go, let's have a go on him, rather than let's have a go on the guy who just did really well with Leighton Orient. I don't see it happening. And I think it's a genuine concern. So whilst the black narrative, you know, the black managers getting sacked is the one that the media are going with, for me it's the English narrative. More English managers sacked and probably replaced with more foreign managers. That seriously worries me. Okay, we'll move on to more pleasant things though. Another game.
Yay.
Yeah. Right, so we're carrying on from where we were before. It's 4 to Nick, 4 to Chris, and 4 and 8 to Richard. This time, it's only 3 rounds. So you've each got 3 sets of goes. And we're doing Belgium.
Ugh.
Yeah, this is going to be very, very tough. How many of you know a lot about Belgian football?
Nope, not until...
Not much until the last few years.
Most of these are relatively modern players. I tried to pick ones who have played recently or are playing at the moment.
I'm trying to think. I can't even name any really olden time Belgians.
Oh, tough luck, because yours is the first question, Nick.
Stitched up again, yeah.
Your 3 players are Bart Gore, Daniel Van Buyten, and Timmy Simmons.
Right. Number three. Can you repeat the question?
Bart Gore, Daniel Van Buyten, and Timmy Simmons.
Right, number 3, Timmy Simmons. Number 2 was the one you said first. And then number 1 was Van Buyten, was it?
Daniel Van Buyten, the former Bayern Munich player. Okay, that's no points. Timmy Simmons is...
Great start.
Timmy Simmons is their second most capped player at 93. He's 38 and he's currently playing, I think, for Club Bruges. Daniel Van Buyten is second with 85 caps, and Bart Gore is 78 caps. So no points for Nick. Okay, Chris, a bit easier. Vincent Kompany, Marouan Fellaini, and Jan Vertonghen.
I have no idea how many caps any of them have.
Use your intuition.
Use the Force, Luke.
This podcast is not brought to you by Star Wars The Force Awakens. Company?
What's it? Vertonghen, Fellaini.
You got 1 point. That is, Jan Vertonghen is first with 73 caps, Vincent Kompany second with 71, and Fellaini has 65. So you got Fellaini right. That's you're on five.
Tongan has more than company.
He does. That was a big surprise. There's a lot. I will say there's a lot of surprises in this list. Okay, right.
Fellaini having 65 caps is just something wrong there.
Right, Richard, your three players, and these are three legends of Belgian football: Eden Hazard, Michel Proudhon, and Mark Wilmots for current manager. So Eden Hazard, current star. Michel Proudhon, one of the best keepers in history, most argued, and Mark Wilmots, current manager.
Right, I'll go with... I remember Wilmots played a fair bit, so I'm going in top. I'll go Hazard bottom, just because he's current, and Proudhon second.
Okay, you get 1 point there. You're right about Wilmots. He's got 70 caps. Hazard is second with 60, and Proudhon has only got 58. That's a big surprise, because he's arguably one of the best keepers of all times.
Yeah.
So you're on 9 points. Right, Nick, this will be a little bit easier for you. A little bit. Thomas Vermaelen, Moussa Dembele, and Emil Mpenza.
Number one, Thomas Vermaelen.
Okay.
Two, Moussa Dembele, and three, Mpenza.
0 points again. Dembele is first with 62 caps. Emil Mpenza has 57, and Vermaelen only has 51.
Wow. Oh, shit.
You are still stuck on 4 points. Okay. Chris. Sorry.
You'd have thought Vermaelen, like, for all his earlier years, would be on around the similar sort of levels. Vertonghen.
Bullshit.
Right, yeah, you would have thought. Okay, Chris. Yep. Kevin Morales, Axel Witsel, and Stephen Defoe.
Morales, Defoe, Victus.
Can you repeat that?
Morales first.
Yeah.
Defoe and the other one.
Witsel. Okay, that's also no points. Alec Axel Witsel has 62.
Kevin... I was going to say Witsel's got... He's been in the Belgian side for years.
Yeah, he has. Kevin Morales has 50 and Stephen Defoe has 48. So that's also no points. Richard, you could really pull away now. Right, now I'm sorry for butchering this because my Flemish is very, very poor. Yves Verhaeghe, Gert De Vlieger, and Toby Alderweireld. I'm not repronouncing any of them.
Yves De Blixer, did you say?
Yves Verhaeghe. I think I'm doing that close.
I'll go Alderweireld top, because I know of him. Van, whatever he was called, Yves second, and who was the last one?
Gert De Vlieger.
In third.
Okay, amazingly, that's all 3 points. that must have been some brilliant guessing there. Because, God, how can you even know who they were with my pronouncing?
Well,
that?
I know who one of them is.
Right, I'm so dying.
Who guessed his top.
Right, okay. Nick, it's time to, like, you know, at least try and get second. Your three players are Thomas Buffel, Romelu Lukaku, and Nicolas Lamberts.
What was the first one?
Thomas Buffel, Nicolas Lamberts, and Romelu Lukaku.
All right, number three. Oh, for fuck's sake. number three, Thomas Buffel, two Lukaku, and number one, the other bloke.
Lamberts. Oh, you got 1 point at least. Lukaku has 40 caps, Lamberts has 36, and Buffel has 35. Right, Chris, you need to get at least 1 point
Lukaku's
here. To get...
on for some caps, then, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's the end of his career.
Doing quite well.
He's going to size the man's legs.
Right, Chris, you need at least 1 point to pull away from Nick and secure second. It's a race for second. Your three players are Thibaut Courtois, Kevin De Bruyne, and Dries Mertens.
Mertens, Courtois, De Bruyne.
You got 1 point there. Dries Mertens is first with 40. Kevin De Bruyne has 35. And Thibaut Courtois only has 33 so far. So you've got second. Richard, how much do you want to rub this in? Here's your three. Nasser Chadli, Jelle Van Damme, and Anthony Van Den Bora.
No idea. They're all sort of periphery guys, aren't they? Chadli, Van Damme, Bora.
You only got one there, so it wasn't rubbing in too much. Van Damme has 31, Chadli has 30, and Anthony Van Den Bora has 29.
Oh.
Which means the final scores are Richard has 13, more than double, Chris is 6, and Nick has 5. Right. Which, to be honest, considering how many things you had to go on, was pretty poor. Pretty poor, guys. We're supposed to know about this stuff.
Can we do England players next time?
Easy. Oh, I'm dying. Nick's answers. Right, Remy Gard has been appointed to Villa. So do we think this is a good signing for Villa, someone who can rejuvenate their season, maybe even go from there? Or do we think this is just a risky choice that's sort of begging relegation?
I think they'll have to probably win half the games to have any chance at staying.
Really, that many?
No, you don't need to win half your games to stay up in the Premier League.
No.
I'm fairly certain if they won half their games, they'd be competing for Champions League football.
No.
There's 27 games in the season left.
Yeah.
They've been doing pretty well after that.
39. If they win 13 games, that's 39 points.
Yeah.
Add to what they've already got.
How many have they got?
And assuming they aren't losing the entirety of the rest of their games.
No, but they're just crap.
Okay, yeah, but do we think this is a good signing?
Got four, so they still have to win a lot of third class.
For me, I worry about this because I see a foreign manager coming in, and I don't just worry about it because it's another foreign manager, someone who doesn't know the Premier League, someone who's used to a big club in Lyon, going to a team like Villa fighting relegation. I think that's a risk.
I think they're going down. And I've never in my lifetime seen Aston Villa go down, but they're going down this year.
I mean, a lot of people have kind of like willed it to go on, you know, for them to go down. But they are one of the old. I think they are the founding club of top level football, aren't they? I think it was their chairman.
Villa and Everton have been in the top league for the longest.
Yeah, I think it was the Villa chairman who first came up with the idea for the Football League. So, I know that'd be a pretty landmark moment if they go down. But does anyone see this maybe going well? I mean, they've got a lot of French players, a lot of French speaking players. Do you think that's maybe why he was brought in?
Well, he's already told them he don't want them speaking French.
Well, that's Villa's chairman's plan out the window.
Yeah, but if they're having like a one-on-one conversation, so put his arm around him or something, it's probably good that they speak the same language in that way. If they're in, what he probably means in a group setting, he wants them all to speak English. But if they're just having one-on-ones in the office or something.
Yeah, he's reiterated that always players should only talk to each other in English.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic rule.
It's a nice rule, but it's maybe not a rule you want to bring in when you're a Frenchman, being brought in mainly because you have a lot of French-speaking players and you're fighting relegation. So you've got to have a lot of players now suddenly learn English on top of not losing every week. I don't know. I can't see this going well. I do think Villa are going down. I do think it's kind of sad.
Think about Villa. They do have an experience back five if they play them. So if they get them organised and get the goalkeeper.
Which back five?
I think I have Hutton, Richards, Lescott and Richardson. It's experience.
Yeah, it's also terrible. Richardson, he is a waste of space.
Do you get it solid? You just get them to stay
together. You think you're barking up the wrong tree on this one.
I'm trying to find a positive.
Okay. Does anyone see this appointment going well? I'll ask that. No, okay, moving on.
I just can't see them winning enough games to stay up.
Okay, bad luck, Villa, you're going straight down. But then again, we all said Leicester were going straight down at the start of this season, so maybe there is hope. Okay, my final...
That's why you should have brought Pearson in, I said that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a good appointment. My final point, and this is almost a self-fulfilling irony, is the Premier League overanalyzed? And I'm asking this because I watched the Liverpool v Chelsea game, and afterwards, you know, they had the whole, you know, we analysing the game, and then they did Monday Night Football and they analysed the game. Now, going into all these details about how Chelsea were just completely outplayed and how Liverpool were perfect, I know that's mainly Carragher, but Gary Neville was going along with it as well. He was doing all of that, and I just remembered watching that game and thinking, actually, for most of the game, Chelsea weren't bad at all. And for most of the game, Liverpool were under the cosh, especially that first half. I couldn't really see what they were going on about, and I was thinking, are we now just overanalysing everything in the Premier League? I don't think even managers analyse some of the stuff they're doing in these Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football things. I think it is just now we're just looking for all the pernickety little points. So my question to you is, do you think it's overanalyzed, or are we just now seeing more of a game?
I just think Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher are brilliant.
It's everything's overanalyzed now. It's like you've got how many cameras at every single game.
Yeah, well,
and
you think back in the day, they had one camera to watch the matches.
Yeah, you go back in the day, you'd see your footage in grainy TV on a Saturday night, and then that'd be it for the week. And now you've got hourly updates on Sky Sports News. You can watch it, everybody can watch it on the internet. You've got every man and his dog having an opinion on everything. Twitter exploding about everything.
Well, do we think it? I mean,
on a podcast.
That's on the podcast. But do we think it's maybe added to, I think, a bit of a noise in terms of, for instance, getting managers sacked? More managers get sacked than ever now. Yes, the money's gone up, so maybe that's why people are pulling the trigger more. But now the criticism is so rife, fans turn against managers and players quicker than ever. John, these days, a player can be your favourite one for a couple of games, and he's terrible for a few games, and now everyone knows every single detail of how he is terrible. I mean, I just think it's a bit too intense these days. I think it was actually starting to come to the detriment of the league a little bit.
I think Twitter's been the big one for it. And that sort of instant.
Did you do the John Terry logic of analysing? You only listen to people who've been there and done it. Not people like
that. Yeah, I like that.
So the bit that annoys me with that, though, is that how it, like, he says the Rios, the Gary Nevilles. There's only a one Rio. There's only one Gary Neville. He doesn't need to pluralise them.
And the thing about that is, when Terry said that, I was thinking, what, have you never watched a film, John Terry, and gone, that was shit? Because you don't need to have made a film to know when a film is terrible, do you? You can know something's bad without having ever done it.
John Terry gets from Rio Ferdinand's a different type of criticism, usually.
Yeah, it's you're a racist towards me and my brother, you dick.
My point was that Mourinho wasn't a great player.
Mourinho was not a great player. Villas-Boas, he was another one who didn't really have a great playing career. I don't think Louis van Gaal had that great a playing career, did he?
Oh, the banger. Ferguson.
I do personally worry with all this constant analysis. You've got more bloggers than ever. You've got more podcasts than ever. Not helping our own cause here. You've got all this stuff, all this noise, all the small people and the big people. You've got all the press. You've got everything is just coming together. And I think it's just so much noise now that one pin drop becomes a thundering applause or, you know, everyone baying for a manager's blood. I think the Mourinho thing has been, for example, blown massively out of proportion. Yes, it's a terrible start. But God, he was the champion last year. People were saying he should be sacked. I mean, it's just ridiculous how loud it all gets.
Well, what it used to be, though, that was like the press was so much the power of it all that, the back page of the Sun would like the sort of the Sun had the power at the general election of, was it the early 90s when they said that for Kinnock. If Kinnock got in, then turn the lights out.
92.
And that changed basically the course of the election. And that used to be the same with the back page. now Twitter is basically decides people's careers because a fan doesn't think they're a lone voice anymore. They go on Twitter and they see that this is trending about something. And everybody knows that they can all sing from the same hymn sheet on it.
Yeah, it used to be the case that if you had an opinion, the only people who were ever going to hear that opinion were people who you could actually go out and speak to about that opinion. Now I can go out and put an opinion, put a picture, and people in China can see that shit. I mean, it's crazy how much that all gets out there. One thing I will say before we sum this up is as much as the Premier League is as over-analysed as it possibly could be, we still don't actually have analysis technology in there to help the referees. So for all this over-analysis, we don't actually use it for anything good. But okay, that's it from this V2 Football Podcast. We hope you had a very good bonfire night. Thank you for joining us. That's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from that.
Okay.
Well, I'm just going to the toilet. Be right back.
Oh, are you kidding me? Are you actually kidding me? That's a joke, right? No, he's actually gone to... You fucker.
Let's record.